Hello and welcome to What Else Is On the Show on the Else Nerds Network. I had to stop and think for a second, like, wait, don't mess up.
Are we on which network? Are we Spreecast again? Are we backing up? Are we moving forward? Are we going sideways?
Are we Galactic Netcast? Where are we at?
Are we in a great glass elevator?
But this is the show where we talk about the past week in movies and TV shows that we've watched and say how we feel about them. I'm Corey, or I'm Gregor Sprague. And joining me...
Yes! And then I've got tomorrow off of work.
And everyone take a drink. That should honestly be our drinking game, as Greg messes up the intro.
Then we would never be sober. Hey, buddy, I'm Gregor Sprague, then, and welcome to my nightmare, because I'm back in Michigan. Well, how are you doing this week, Gregor?
I'm doing pretty good. I was actually in your old stomping grounds for a quick minute, because I don't know when the last time you were in Detroit, but they did some road work, and I went with my grandma. We toured, like I mentioned to you guys before, but we toured up the Thumb seeing lighthouses. We started in Marine City and then went up. Was going to hit the one in Bay City, Michigan, but Google Maps hates us and decided to send us to some yacht club. Like, oh, hey, yeah, 600 feet. It's right there. No lighthouse. It's like, yeah. And then you look in there, and it's telling you, you're here, or you're here on just, like, the screen. The lighthouse is here, but it says you're done. I'm like, and you're not saying get on a boat. Just how exactly?
I had an experience once when I was still working for Geek Squad where I was going to work, and then... my first job canceled, so I turned around to come back home. My GPS, there was a truck in the way. And I was like, well, I'm going to go around this truck, and I'll find an alternate route or something like that. So I hit alternate route on the GPS. The GPS led me up this street that just dead-ended. It was like a big barricade and a bunch of nature around it, and I hate nature. So I turn around and go back. Going back, I somehow never made it back home. I kept driving down this road much further than I had started on it. And then I just tried to turn in the direction of where I lived. It was not far away. It was, I swear, not 5 to 10 minutes from my house. I wound up going up in these hills and finding emus and other weird creatures that, where am I? I fell into a wormhole. My Garmin took me into a wormhole. It became a whole Star Trek Q episode thing. And, that's when I decided not to go to work. I was just like, oh, no, this day's screwed. I'm going back home.
But, yeah, no, so we went. But, so when you go, I think it's 94. Welcome to Michiganders. But you go down 94 and it turns into, she wanted to go to 275. And they changed it to where it's a roundabout. Like you're going, you know, go off in this big circle up. She's like, no, that's not right. I've never done that one before. We're going down and we're in, you know, basically the highway part of Detroit now. Like we're like, you're seeing all the big walls and then the roads are up here. And I'm like, yeah, I'm looking on Google Maps. I'm like, yeah, you've overshot it by quite a bit. She's like, okay, well, how do I turn around? Good question. Go to the next exit we see. Because that's the other fun part. It's not like where I'm used to where it's like, oh, exit every, like almost every street.
You're in the boonies.
No, actually I'm not. I'm in a smaller city because you get up in the Thumb. That's the boonies.
That's true.
Because I went from, up to here maybe in the Thumb and in case people are wondering why I'm using my hand as a map, shape of Michigan. Well, shape of Michigan, Spock. I got up to here, and all of a sudden I have no more cell phone signal. It's like, oh, you're roaming. I'm like, yeah, I know. You guys don't have a tower here.
You know that's only part of the shape of Michigan, but I'm not wearing loose enough pants to show you the UP. What you been watching, Gregor?
I have been watching... let's start with the last movie I saw, 10,000 Saints. Now, this one I actually saw through watching What TV show was it? I want to say, like, Suits or something. It was one of the show, the commercials they had on in between from watching Suits on Demand. And this is one, you watch The Morning Stream, right?
I do. I don't always get to, but I try to when I can.
Because they had, for this last week's, or this last edition of Recommendals, it was, like, movies that, like, your expectations were different, or something like that. This is mine for that, because from the commercial, it's like, oh, this is like a rock and roll sort of thing, like maybe a little bit like Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist or Almost Famous or something like that. And all the actors in there that I recognize are good actors. Like, it's got Ethan Hawke, Emil Hirsch, Asa Butterfield, Haley Steinfeld, Emily Mortimer, and Evan Goggia is in there in the beginning. And, like, so it's like, okay, I'm going to watch this. I'm watching it, and holy crap, I got a different movie than what I was expecting with just it focusing on music. Because it's a little bit more coming-of-age story, where you're focusing on Asa Butterfield's character as he's living in this podunk small town in Vermont. And his dad, played by Ethan Hawke, moved to New York shortly after he was 13 or something. His dad moved to New York. And so he's living there with his mom and his friends. And his best friend, Teddy, is there, who's played by Evan Goggia, who is in the Tut miniseries on Spike. And Haley Steinfeld, who knows... She plays Ethan Hawke's girlfriend's daughter, who his girlfriend's played by Emily Mortimer, and she comes in town to visit, and she has a one-night stand with Evan Goggia's character, with Teddy, and Teddy and Asa Butterfield, they're into drugs and all this other stuff, and they fall asleep after, you know, doing cocaine and huffing Freon. And the main character, Asa Butterfield's character, wakes up. Teddy does not, sort of thing. And so he goes to New York to try to get, try to get away from his just being there. And his mom thinks it's so he can get clean when his dad grows weed and stuff like that. And it's a really good movie. That's only like the first 20 minutes of the movie. Like, the rest you're basically following Haley Steinfeld and Emil Hirsch, who plays Teddy's brother, his older brother, who's in a hardcore straight edge band. And it's all set in the 80s. It's all set during the time of, I cannot think of that park now in New York, in Brooklyn. The park there that, like, there was a whole bunch of homeless people that was living there at the time, and the mayor kicked them all out, so basically doing gentrification. It's all set around there. It's based on a book of the same name, and it is a really good movie. Like, it changed my expectations on it quickly, but it works. And the songs are pretty good, too. I mean, I can't really say Emil Hirsch is a great singer, because he's not singing... like, you would think it's, you know, punk band, like a punk hardcore band, and so you get that. But, yeah, I enjoy the movie. I think you guys should check it out. I think it's only available through Netflix, or not Netflix, through Xfinity, like, rent-to-own sort of deal. I don't know if it's on Amazon or any of the other streaming services. But, yeah, so check it out.
Okay.
So, Corey, which one of the 50 million movies that you watched over the past week are you going to talk? You want to talk about?
You know what? We'll start with Edge of Tomorrow, which I kind of went into going off of the fact that it did not do very well in the theaters, but everybody I know who saw it really seemed to like it.
Yeah.
And I think it's one of those things that wasn't advertised well, and maybe people were in sort of a bad place with Tom Cruise at the time, although that seems to have... gone away now, since Mission Impossible is beating the snot out of us in the draft. I kind of went into it still not with very high expectations, just because sci-fi isn't always my thing. Sorry, Dave. And Tom Cruise isn't always my thing. I just kind of wasn't exactly sure. I got the fact that it was more like a video game, that the people that were in it kept dying and kept respawning, essentially. But I didn't know the where's and the why's of that. And I knew Emily Blunt was in it, but it doesn't really start with her. It's mostly Tom Cruise's character. And one of the great things about Tom Cruise in this is that usually, or at least how when I grew up, Tom Cruise was like the best at everything. So if Tom Cruise was playing a pilot, he was the best pilot. If Tom Cruise was playing a high schooler, he was the coolest high schooler. If Tom Cruise was playing a NASCAR driver, he was the greatest one of those. I don't think he did very well as a veteran, but other than that, he was even a really cool big brother or little brother for Rain Man. I got sick of the Tom Cruise is good at everything, Cocktail, just whatever he was doing. Is like, no, that's enough. He's not the everyman anymore. He's just the Uberman. This starts out with Tom Cruise just kind of being smarmy Tom Cruise, which is a role that he does really well. What was the movie where he played the agent to like Ben Stiller and a bunch of guys where they all went into the jungle?
Oh, Tropic Thunder.
Tropic Thunder. Tom Cruise in that was like a breakout from Tom Cruise as what we had been seeing him for a while, for a long while.
And I think Tropic Thunder was in the midst of the crazy Tom Cruise.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But it was like he came out there and he did something really silly. And then he went and he did the dance in the outfit and the whole costuming and everything at the MTV Awards, I think, too. And he'd done some other stuff, too. He'd done an MTV Awards short with Ben Stiller when he was in the midst of Mission Impossible 2, and Ben Stiller was supposed to be his body double. Yeah. And is kind of obsessed with him and is sort of single white femaling him a little bit. But then it's just Tom got completely goofy back with him, and it was actually, I think Tom Cruise is a guy that is honestly pretty funny. And while he's not necessarily down to earth, because I think he's a space cadet, he's at least an interesting kind of charismatic space cadet. And that is perfect for what he was playing in this. He starts out as a guy who's kind of like he's the promoter for the war. There's a war going on between the humans and this alien race called Mimics. And Tom Cruise is a guy who's in the military in the U.S. and he's going around and he's basically promoting how well they're doing against the Mimics to keep morale up. And then he gets taken to this base overseas, and the big guy who's in charge of sending troops into the war over there is like, basically, I've just taken ownership of you, and you're going out in the field, and you're leading people in the field tomorrow. And Tom Cruise is like, I'm not a military guy. I know I'm wearing this uniform. I know that I'm supposed to be, you know, part of this, but really, I'm good at this thing. I don't know how to use a gun. I don't know how to fight. I don't know how to do any of that stuff. And so the guy basically just treats him like a deserter, demotes him down to private, throws him out into the field with this whole team of what are basically like the losers, and they go out there, and he dies pretty fast, which you would expect. But the way that he dies affects him in such a way that he wakes up to the morning where he shows up on that base again, and they like introduce him to all the other rejects, and then they get him ready to go out in the field. So he keeps doing it over and over and over again. It becomes like Groundhog's Day. But he's not sure why it's happening. And finally he runs into Emily Blunt's character out on the field, and she says, come see me when you wake up. When she recognizes what he's doing and what he's going through. Because it's happened to her before, too. It moves pretty well. I mean, Erin wasn't really sure what we were watching at all. She knew nothing about the movie. She's always like my secondary judge on things. Is this actually good, or is it just good because I'm a nerd? she laughed quite a few times. And she likes Emily Blunt. I don't even know if she realized that was Emily Blunt in this.
Yeah.
But there were moments where he kept waking up, and it was just the stuff like, oh, what'd you do? Oh, I think I broke my back. fine. And she pulls out her gun and just puts a bullet in his head so he'll restart. And he's just like, every time I look at his phone, I was like, oh, crap. It was humorous. There was some great adventure in it. The way that the whole payoff at the end of, like, when he loses the ability to reboot the day again and they still go out, it shows the improvements of the character over time. Kind of like, I mean, I keep going back to Groundhog's Day because that's a movie that really defined this kind of story.
Yeah, and I think everyone, when I, well, the, it's based off the book, All You Need Is Kill, but when Edge of Tomorrow came out, I think that's where everyone compared it to was Groundhog's Day.
Yeah. But done in at least an original way. It wasn't just like it was just Groundhog's Day done over again, because there's been other things that have taken that on, too. It's definitely more of a sci-fi story with some really good action stuff and some good heroism and some good payoffs for the other characters who seem like they're minor characters to begin with, and then they get their due in the long run of the in the course of the film. So I really liked it. Everybody who said that it was a good flick, I have to agree with them. It was a lot of fun. And, you know, while I tease Tom, because Tom Cruise is Tom Cruise crazy, he does a lot of things that I do like these days. I do like the Mission Impossible movies past the second one. And this is another point of, like, maybe I could watch more of Tom's stuff. What was the other one he did? Was it Jack Reacher?
Yeah.
Where he was kind of an intrigue. That was actually really good, too. So, yeah. Now just give up Scientology, Tom.
Yeah. So the other movie that I saw was the Inbetweeners movie number 2. And this one, really good. I enjoyed this one, but this has the caveat of I enjoyed it because I've seen the Inbetweeners TV show and the Inbetweeners, the first Inbetweeners movie. So it's like I liked it for that reason. You might like it if you enjoy comedies, if you enjoy British TV shows. But this one is pretty funny. You start out the four main guys, they're all in different areas like of England studying, and you come in and you're like, wait, am I watching the right movie here? Because this looks like it could be some sort of Middle Earth, Harry Potter sort of thing, and then you realize, oh, it's three of the guys dressed up as Harry, Ron, and Hermione from Harry Potter, going to what they thought was a fancy dress party, but it was just the character Will getting picked on again, like he always does, and is oblivious to it. And that's the start with all of it, and it goes on and gets funnier and funnier from there. If you've ever watched The Inbetweeners, you will really enjoy the show.
Now, does it kind of require that you have watched The Inbetweeners?
Not really. There's some things that you'll get more if you've seen The Inbetweeners. Like, you watched Increasingly Poor Decisions of Todd Margaret, right?
No. Okay. I watched, like, the first episode.
Okay, so
and
you
I just
know...
kind of lost it.
So, you know the guy that was Todd Margaret's assistant, but was, like, playing him the whole time, that tall, skinny dude?
No.
You don't remember him?
I don't remember anything about the show other than I watched the first episode, sort of.
Yeah. Well, because he's in here. He plays, I think his character's name is Simon. And he's this, like, lovable doof-type person. And he has consistently funny moments. And we get to the end of the movie, and I'm like, so this is how they're going to end the film. They have a complete false fake out on me. Like, I'm sitting there going, so no Inbetweeners movie 3? No. Because, and I'm being spoiler free here, but it's just, you're sitting there watching this and you're like, this is a weird place to end, like, especially if I'm starting, like, I'm waiting to see credits. And then, hey, it's a false fake out. It's a fake out. I'm like, oh, cool. They're not dead. No, because they go, so the whole overarching plot is they meet with one of the characters in there. He's always a braggart. He's like, oh, I've slept with 1,000 ladies and, you know, stuff like that. And he's talking about how he's went to Australia to be with his uncle, and how he's got this big old mansion, and, you know, he's just swimming in the pussy and all this stuff. And, like, and it's funny because they actually show it like an Old Spice style commercial, like where, like, the long tailing scene. And you're like, I know this character, or at least I was like, I know this character. I know he's full of just BS, but I want this to be true so much. So they fly over to see him because, oh, he's doing so well. He's doing so well. He's working in the men's room as one of the attendants. He's washing people's hands. Yeah. That's it. But it's just it keeps getting funnier and funnier with all the stuff you see. One of the actresses who's in the TV show Humans, which, Corey, you need to be watching, is in here, and it's like a night and day, like, her character on Humans and her character in The Inbetweeners 2. And it's just, it's really funny. You would just need to see, like, maybe one episode of the TV show to understand a lot of the stuff for the movie, but you don't have to. Like, it'll still be funny for you if you check it out.
I think I remember Glenn and you trying to get me to watch the show before, and I think it was a matter of it not being on Netflix at the time or something that I wasn't able to at that moment.
Yeah.
So it's been in the back of my head of like, oh, if I get the chance, I should watch The Inbetweeners at some point. And then there was another one about the British teen superheroes that I think that I was
Misfits.
So those they've stuck in there. It's just availability and time I ain't got time to TV. Maybe that's what I'll do with it.
There you go. Just watch the pilot, and then watch this movie because it's really good. But yeah. I don't know what else to be said, because I think it is available on Netflix, the Inbetweeners TV show. I don't know about the first movie or even this movie, because it's like more difficult distribution rights. So I think they did, for the TV show, it was done through BBC Worldwide, because it's a Channel 4 show. And then, so the movies, I think, are done through Film 4. So, I don't know. You very well could possibly find it on there. I just remembered hearing about it. I'm like, oh yeah, I should check that out, and downloaded it and watched it and loved it.
It does seem to be on Netflix. In fact, both movies look to be on Netflix now. So
good. You have no excuse.
That may be the time that I take now. I don't know. I got a lot of TV to watch now, man.
No, yeah, I hear you.
Thank God I don't do anything stupid like a comic book show, because I would just pass out.
Oh. So, because you have in here all movies or specials?
I have one special in there, which was almost like a movie. But yeah, I was trying to bring some variants in. I'm gonna jump to, speaking of comic books, I'm gonna jump to Conan the Barbarian. Not because I want to talk about Conan the Barbarian, really. This movie took me a week to watch. And I don't mean I recorded it one day and had it on the DVR for a week. I mean, I watched it in small segments over the period of a week. I started watching it last Sunday, and then I was waiting for something else to start, probably like True Detective or something. And I got so far in it, and I'm like, okay, fine, I'll record the rest of it just to see what the hell happens. And then Monday I started watching some of it, and I got maybe a half hour in, and then Aaron showed up. I'm like, I'm not going to put Aaron through this crap. And then somewhere in the middle of the week I watched about 15 minutes of it, and I'm like, I'm not going to put me through this crap. And Sunday this week I was like, I guess I'll finish watching Conan. And the only reason why I really wanted to see it, other than the fact of the morbid curiosity of seeing a modern Conan movie that wasn't Arnold Schwarzenegger, was that the lead in this movie is going to be our Aquaman.
Oh, it's that's what I was wondering. I'm like, okay, is this the Jason Momoa?
This is the Jason Momoa film, and I have not really seen him in anything other than Game of Thrones.
Yeah,
where he played Khal Drogo, the guy that all the girls drool over, even though he was kind of a vicious rapist, but he did die suddenly and look good doing it mostly. So. Yeah, I was like, I should see what there is to this guy. And not a lot, but I don't know that that's his fault necessarily, because this is just not a great movie. This was, this is probably what you would expect from a modern-day Conan the Barbarian movie as far as how much they actually put into it and what it accomplished with the character and the stories around it. It did have Ron Perlman in it as his dad, which was kind of nice. And it had, I always forget her name, Rachel Nichols, I think, who is in Continuum now. She had also played Scarlet in the first G.I. Joe movie, so she's got to live in shame for that. But good for her that Continuum seems to be doing well, or is about to expire, I think. Anyway.
Yeah, they got one last season.
Yeah. So this movie was just kind of, I'm watching this, and as I'm watching it, I'm thinking, I wonder if this is sort of the direction that they're going to go in for Aquaman. Because Aquaman in the comics we see as the blonde, almost Captain America looking guy, the blonde hair, the piercing blue eyes, you know, wears orange and green and looks very, you know, we'll just say whitefish. He is just, you know, he's never been cool. And they've tried as hard as they can to make him cool. At one point, they gave him a beard and had Piranha chew off his hand and put a magic weapon on his hand instead. Now he's walking around with a trident, but even that doesn't make him look really cool. Then they get Jason to play him in a film. Looks completely different from anything that's been presented in the comics before. And
I always
barbarian-ish.
Yeah, I always say, when I mention this to other people, when they, because, you know, people know, oh, hey, he's a comic book guy. He knows about these movies. And I always say that they've changed it to a Pacific Islander looking with him.
Which is great.
Because of the fact that you look at the Earth, what's a bigger ocean, the Atlantic or the Pacific? The Pacific. So therefore, you have a better chance of Atlantis being there than over in the Atlantic somewhere between here and where the Titanic sunk.
I don't know. I would expect the Atlantis to be in the Atlantic, but that's just me. Is it different Detroits? I don't know. So, but one of the things that you think about with Aquaman is that as far as his story goes, he is from Atlantis. He's from essentially another world. He's from a world with, you know, a monarchy, with a king, where Arthur is king, or at least becomes king, with all of the Atlanteans and their people, and the Merpeople, with Mira and all of hers as well. So there's a couple different races in there. There's obviously potential for war between them. I don't know that it's going to be political intrigue in the Aquaman movie. In the DC universe, it's mostly been about smashing face and cracking necks. But I do think that if you're going to draw this whole new world of things to make a cool story hang on, a guy who's been in Game of Thrones and a guy who's played a barbarian, warlord essentially, is a cool choice to do with that. It's not so far away from Aquaman that it can't be Aquaman. But it's also breaking the expectations of what Aquaman is. So that's what I kind of watch this as, is I'm watching Phonan for the fact that he's not really Conan. But I'm thinking the whole time, is this what we're going to get for Aquaman? And I kind of feel like that's what DC was thinking. That's why they pulled him in. Now, I know he was up for Drax in Guardians of the Galaxy, but he said he didn't want to be typecast, so he wasn't going to just play the big strong guy in Guardians. So he's playing dainty little fish man in Aquaman, I guess.
Yeah, and I don't see him losing muscle mass to play Arthur Curry, to play Aquaman.
Aquaman was born in the ocean, so he is a swimmer, but he has the legs of a dancer, and that's been his dream. So it's honestly DC's version of Step Up. unfortunately, Channing Tatum was already occupied trying to get Gambit over at Marvel or Fox, so this is Momoa breaking out of his shell, his clamshell.
Oh, the horrible puns. So,
otherwise, it was a terrible, terrible movie.
Yeah, I was just going to say, so not a good movie if it took you a week to watch.
That is a tribute to my persistence way more than it is a tribute to the film.
Yeah.
Calling me back to it.
I want to hit real quick on Mr. Robot. Because are you caught up or are you...
I am not. That's why it is not italicized.
Never mind then. That'll be next week because this episode was really, really good.
And there's only two episodes left.
Yeah.
Of the season.
And holy crap. And other things that I could say that will tease Corey but not spoil it for Corey. All right. So what else is italicized? So Miss Robinson and Big Brother? Is that you got italicized?
And Suits. But those are the things that I actually got to watch. Pick one.
Let's go Suits, because Suits had this pretty interesting dynamic happen with the show. And I know it's been a little bit since we talked about Suits, but we're trying to not talk about the same shows every week. Suits, with this past episode, we have Mike becoming a junior partner, which is big trouble when you never went to law school and you could be facing a whole bunch of crimes along with the whole law firm.
Every time they think they're safe on the Mike situation, something pops up. And then they were even looking for the way out of it to get him to not become junior partner and trying to find a way to explain it away. And Jessica changed her mind, and then it blew up in her face and all their faces anyways. Sort of. I mean, his secret gets kept, but he's also now left with the question of, like, is he doing Rachel harm by having her be his partner in this secret?
Yeah.
Which is something he should have come to grips with a long time ago.
Yeah. No, yeah, it's true.
It shouldn't just be, is this person trustworthy enough to keep my secret? It's also, is giving this person my secret going to do them more damage than good?
Yeah. Sorry, Dave messaged on Facebook and it popped up in my face on my Mac. And I'm like, oh, hey, Dave said something to a crew that I'm in, or that we're all in. Distractions. But no, yeah, so that one was an interesting part, but for me, the bigger part, the more interesting part, was the was with Harvey and Lewis.
Yeah.
Like, you have everything bit Harvey in the ass. With him sleeping with Esther, Lewis's sister, and Lewis not accepting an apology, and him punching Lewis, and getting into a scuffle and throwing him into a table, to where he's basically wanting Harvey to be suspended for 3 months and, you know, all this other stuff, and you see Harvey finally show real emotion, to show who he is, to, like, why he's doing all the things he's doing to Lewis, and part of it to me...
You see Harvey actually open up.
Yeah.
Which is, it's not just one thing for him to begrudgingly say, Lewis, you know, we're friends, we're comrades, you know, we have a mutual respect for each other, which Harvey has done from time to time, and then he goes behind Lewis and is like, he's just, Lewis is a dumbass again. And no sympathy for Harvey of getting in trouble with Lewis for sleeping with Esther when Lewis specifically asked him not to, and Harvey said he wouldn't, and then he immediately went and did that. Harvey brings a lot of pain down onto himself.
Yeah.
But where Harvey has been going to this therapist and finally making some progress, which needs to happen, you know, because Harvey is essentially Michael on Bird Notice, and that the main character keeps saying he's going to grow up and he's going to trust his friends and he's going to improve. And then immediately in the same episode, he does the same stupid shit over again. It gets old. It gets old after a while.
Yeah.
And in this case, we were seeing him make the real progress, the real growth, and that didn't quite work out.
No, yeah. And it bit him in the ass. And which I think ended up biting Lewis in the butt, too, with it, just because of, like, because, okay, yeah, I can trust Harvey when I get over my shit, in a matter of speaking. Because, like, and, but yeah, that story had me engrossed more than the Mike, oh, hey, we got this girl who I tried to sleep with and told her I was a lawyer when I wasn't, and I was still a bike messenger and all that stuff, just so I can get in her pants.
It was a good throwback to the earlier stuff, to the first season or whatever she came in. I recognized her from Pretty Little Liars.
I did too. You're good. It's okay. Although you have the excuse because your wife watches Pretty Little Liars. I just watched the other ABC Family shows in which they advertise Pretty Little Liars.
Yep. She is the best character on the show. Yeah, so, and absolutely the Lewis Harvey thing was the bigger deal. It affects the firm. It affects the ongoing stories that have been going on already this season with Lewis siding with the guy who was trying to take Harvey down and realizing that he screwed up then. And now Lewis, it also shows that Lewis doesn't grow. It shows that Lewis is the same problem, is that he's always going to feel this competition with Harvey that he needs to grow past. He's got his name up on the wall now, but it's never enough for him. He wants Harvey to respect him, but Lewis is sort of a petulant baby in a lot of ways and needs to get his way. And in some cases, it's endearing. You know, sometimes you want him to win, and in other cases, it's like you just want to rain napalm down on all of your friends because you didn't get your way in this one thing. And, you know, the thing with napalm is that it sprays back on you, too, and you're just as burned up as everybody else. And he keeps hitting that. You know, he's hitting a point where Donna, who has done everything she can to remain on his side, as tough as it's been this season, you know, she's like, I don't think I'm going to be able to work with you any longer if this is who you're going to be.
Yeah.
And Jessica has completely, like, you know, she tries to keep things in order, but she's on Harvey's side, and she never makes secrets about it.
Yeah. Well, that's going to do for the first half. We got our breaks here, so let's do starts and stops. Starting with Tuesday, August 18th, at 8:53 p.m. on FYI, you have the special presentation, Married at First Sight, Married Life, Happy Father's Day. At 9 p.m. on True TV of the second season premiere of Hack My Life. And Cooking Channel has the first season finale of Stakeout with Kix Brooks. At 9:30 on True TV, you have the series premiere of 6 Degrees of Everything. The first episode called Einstein to Breast Implants. And at 10 p.m. on TBS, you have the first season finale of Clipped, a show I was trying to power through. Well, not power through, but catch up on today and failed because I got busy again. Gosh, growing up is hard.
Tell me about it, man.
Yeah, moving on to Wednesday, August 19th, at 12:30 a.m., on Comedy Central is the second season finale of The Meltdown with Jonah and Kumail. At 8:30 p.m. on ABC Family is the new time slot for Kevin from Work. At 9 p.m. on GSN is the second season finale of Skin Wars. And at 9:30 on NBC is the first season finale of Mr. Robinson. On Thursday at 8 p.m. on ABC, you have the first season finale of the Astronaut Wives Club. At 10 p.m. on IFC, you have the series premiere of Documentary Now. And Spike TV has the 1 hour first season finale of Lip Sync Battle, Terrence Howard versus Taraji P. Henson, parts 1 and 2. Which is intriguing to me because they're usually only a half hour, not hour long.
Yeah, and I hope that they're at least good at it because the second season has had some weak sauce competition.
I haven't watched any of the second half.
You haven't missed a lot. there was one guy who I believe is on some new show. I don't even know which one. He did I Need Love by LL Cool J. That was amazing.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the other thing is that they've been doing is that they're telling people to send in videos of them doing songs, and they're giving away the songs from the next week in that commercial for the send-in. So I liked being surprised by the things, and when I'm suddenly getting a glimpse of next week's act and hearing what song they're going to do and seeing their costumes, that completely blows it.
No, yeah. On Friday, August 21st, you have at 9 p.m. the first season finale of Killjoys on Sci-Fi. And at 10:30 on Food Network is the first season finale of Burgers, Brew, and Q. On Saturday at 8 p.m. on Lifetime is the original telefilm, The Unauthorized Full House Story. I'm already over the unauthorized version of whatever.
And I'm going to wind up having to tape it and watch it.
at 9 p.m. on Stars is the series premiere of Blunt Talk. FYI has the new time slot for Tiny House Nation, one of the many, many Tiny House shows Corey watches.
Tiny House shows.
Science Channel has the fourth season finale of Outrageous Acts of Science. At 9:30 p.m. on Stars is the second season premiere of Survivor's Remorse. 10 p.m. on HBO, you have the special presentation. Basically, it's a stand-up special. Tig Notaro, Boyish Girl Interrupted. And at 11 p.m. on Comedy Central is the special presentation of Natasha Leggero live from Bimbo's. On Sunday at 12 a.m. on Comedy Central is the fourth season premiere of The Half Hour, this episode with Liza Traeger. At 8 p.m. on AMC is the one-hour special presentation of Talking Dead, Season 6 Preview Special. And immediately following that is, at 9 p.m., is the 90-minute series premiere of Fear of the Walking Dead on AMC. At 10 p.m. on HBO is the first season finale of Ballers, which 2 weeks ago's episode had The Rock's character singing Shake It Off in the car. Brilliant. It was just brilliant.
Which he did on Lip Sync Battle.
Yeah. Okay. It was just a step under the Lip Sync Battle one, but that was mainly because it was just him, you know, in the car because he got good news, sitting there singing Shake It Off, not being the people's champ and just destroying Jimmy Fallon.
He did.
Yeah. At 10:30 p.m. on HBO, you have the first season finale of The Brink. And at 11:59 on Adult Swim, it is the series finale of Aqua Teen Hunger Force, the last one forever and ever. On Monday, August 24th, at 7:30 p.m. on Nickelodeon, you have the series premiere of Shimmer and Shine. 8 p.m. on ABC Family is the fourth season summer premiere of Switched at Birth. 9 p.m. on Disney XD is a special presentation, Star Wars Droid Tales, Crisis on Coruscant. And then at 10:30 p.m. on FYI is the new episode of Special Night of Get Swanked, which I don't know what that show is, but I just decided to announce it anyways. Now we got the summer movie draft, in which Beatmaster has, I'm going to say, officially won. There's no way I can catch up. There's no way you can catch up. Beatmaster, congratulations. You have won the league.
Evan, but he's going to want to rub it into our face how much he's beating us by when it's all said and done. So.
Yeah. Evan is in fourth place with $693.2 million. I am in third place with
736.7.
Yeah, I was going to say with The Man from U.N.C.L.E. bringing in $13.4 million in its opening weekend, getting destroyed by, what was it, Mission Impossible, I want to say? With $736.7 million, as you said.
Mission Impossible and Straight Outta Compton.
Yeah, Straight Outta Compton was the one that destroyed it, too. Corey, you were in second with $971 million, and Beatmaster is in first with $1,246.6 million. This has been your movie draft. I've been Roberto Villegas. But yeah, so I'm still going to like show Brian and Tom and all them, like, hey, here's how the random draft could possibly work. Because they've been talking about doing that. Like, yeah, we had to drop Fast 7 because, or Furious 7 because the we drafted a week after. And also, side note for you and Beat and Evan when he watches this, if you go to boxofficedraft.com and look that way, the results are not going to be complete because I didn't change Corey, your pin for vacation. And I can't do that now because it doesn't show up anymore. So, yeah. All
right. I never went there. I just trust you to tell us how things went. You could lie your ass off. I'd never know.
Note to self. Change scores next week for winning. But yeah, so let's see. Let's do real quick. Let's do Big Brother talk. Because this is probably the first week I've seen where an HOH, like when he's done, when the person is done being HOH, has regretted being HOH. With Steve.
I don't know if it's my first time, but the reaction was pretty extreme. And I think it also, the problem became that not enough time to think kind of thing. Shelly got eliminated.
Yeah.
And they did the double elimination night. So Shelly gets eliminated at the beginning of the episode, which was sort of a surprise because everybody was going to get Vanessa out. And then the only person who voted Vanessa, I don't know that anybody did. I think they all unanimously voted out Shelly.
Yeah.
And it just kind of turned from, oh, we're going to backdoor this person to, so Becky just got screwed. Becky not only got screwed that, you know, she put Vanessa up on the block and was backdooring her, but then all of the people that were supposed to be teamed up with her just suddenly said, you know what, instead, even though we agreed with you a couple minutes ago, we're going to do this. That was kind of bald-faced. All right, sure.
Yeah.
And then once Shelly left, they did the immediate new HOH, new nominations, veto, and then elimination. And Steve, unfortunately, won. You know, unfortunately for Steve. Which was amazing to me, because I'm just sitting there the whole time saying, Steve, you're not a threat to anybody. Steve, nobody gives a crap about you. You keep saying how Shelly is your biggest concern in the house. Shelly doesn't talk about you because she just doesn't care. But then what killed me was that Steve, not Shelly, Becky.
Yeah.
Steve's like been talking trash about Becky the whole time. And then as soon as he gets the opportunity, he doesn't put Becky up at all.
It's here's my thing with the whole thing, is he messed up. He panicked when he won HOH because he won it on the double eviction night. Because when you watch yesterday's episode where they basically showed a lot of the other stuff in the recap, he's like, no, I don't want to talk. I don't know. We're good. With, like, because usually they, you know, in years past, they've went to the hammock room, whatever room, the little break room right there, and talked one by one, like, okay, why should I put you?
I don't think anybody even went to him to say, oh, Steve, you know, what are you thinking? What do you want to do? They just sat there and they talked crap about how they looked in the competition and stuff while in the commercial. It's like, maybe you guys should pay attention to who's HOH.
No, it was him. I'm putting it all on him, not necessarily them, because you see Liz or Julia, whichever one was wearing the blue dress, go, so do you want to pull us aside and talk? And he's like, no, I think I got it. Which basically...
But who does that? Who says, oh, okay, we're going to leave the HOH alone and let them just decide for themselves. I'm not even going to go make a case for myself. In any other game, in any other situation in this game, everybody goes to the HOH. The person who doesn't go to the HOH is the one who automatically gets nominated just because you didn't come talk to me.
Yeah.
Why should I feel bad if I put you up on the block because you didn't come talk to me? And everybody just sat there because they didn't think that they were on Steve's radar as an enemy.
Because he wasn't on theirs.
Because he's been nothing. He's been communing with the camera the whole game and talking into the air. So he's the biggest freaking wild card in the world, and that's where it blew up, is that he went off of bad intel from Vanessa, which again shows they should have chose to get her out of there.
Yeah.
And eliminated someone who shouldn't have been eliminated. Not that I care. It's not like it was written for Jack or anything. But you could tell. Then once they were up on the block and Johnny won the veto, he was like, yeah, keep the nominations the same. And Johnny did, and Johnny's all, well, I didn't know who else would go up there instead. Yeah, but Johnny, you weren't going to go up there, and you could have saved at least one of your... You could have shown some semblance of giving a crap about your allies.
Yeah.
But you didn't. So that looks bad for Johnny, in my opinion, too. So it was just... It was a big screw-off, kind of like... It really threw a wrench in the show. It definitely did what this night is supposed to do. So good TV, good game show, bad moves, and then the fact that Liz won the HOH, like, who is Liz loyal to? She's loyal to her sister. She seems to have loyalty to Austin. I don't think she cares as much about Vanessa. So it's kind of like... There's two factions of the house, and then there's a third middle that doesn't have loyalty to anybody. And it's kind of like it's almost a three-way tie if people would just work together and think things through.
Yeah,
but they're not. It's sort of bad gameplay. I'm probably rooting for Johnny or James when it comes to this game. Maybe even Julia or Becky, just because Becky at least has tried to make some powerful moves, and Julia, I think, if we get Liz out of there, Julia seems to me a much more capable player,
and
capable person. She's not showmancing her way through, and she just walked into a situation where it's like, well, all right, all these things were determined that I have to play this way, because that's how you've been playing.
Yeah. It started out as like a fake showmance with Liz, but it's grown into a real one.
Yeah, Liz and Austin.
Yeah, she's like, oh, yeah, I've sort of fallen for him. I'm like, this is why you should have listened to your sister. And the other ones are saying, keep Austin at arm's distance away.
Well, but, you know, if she's fallen for him, that's better than leading him on.
Yeah.
You know, at least she's not Mike boogieing him to the end. That never makes me feel happy, but I don't see any of these people being America's favorite player. I have a feeling America's favorite player is going to be Johnny Mac.
Yeah. No, yeah. Johnny Mac's
just the most enjoyable person to watch on the show.
Oh, yeah. I mean, with how he talks and all that stuff, it's like, yeah, he's easily America's favorite. I could see either him or James.
James is definitely the next one up for me. Johnny, though, that moment where he's talking to Vanessa, and Vanessa's essentially trying to coax him into making a deal with her so they can work together, and Johnny's just not going for it. He's like, well, no, I didn't think you were trustworthy. Well, why not? Well, I don't like the way that you yell at people, and you just kind of get your way on things. She's like, really? Are you telling me this? Yeah, I'm telling you that. You know, I'm just being honest with you. It's just so not giving an F about it at all. It's just, that was fantastic.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, it might blow up in his face in the game, but you know what? Screw it. I just love that.
Oh, yeah.
He's just been shrugging stuff up. Well, I guess I could throw the competition. I guess if you don't play very good, I don't even really have to throw it that hard. They keep telling me they're going to keep me here and keep me safe. Sure, I whatever. You know, he's been so classic the whole way through. It's like, how can you not root for that guy? Other than the fact that he screams at the screen the whole time, which I probably do out here.
No comment. But no, I'd rather do that with Steve. With everything he said, it's like he's always like, when he's talking in the diary room, he's always jumping and stuff. And I'm like, why, dude? Like, how he talks in the diary room, it's like he's an overexcited poodle.
Yeah.
Like, he's just like, you're actually paying attention to me right now. But no, so. The other one is Mr. Robinson. I haven't seen numbers on it, but NBC's billing it as a hit. So how are you enjoying Mr. Robinson, and do you think it'll get a season two?
Do you mean like a hit, like they put out a hit on viewers? And it's like being assassinated by a crappy show?
Well, that answered that question, but no. I meant more like how they traditionally say, like, oh, it's a smash hit. And I'm like, all right, I enjoy the show. I don't know necessarily that it's a smash hit.
I think it is a middle to low sitcom with a very charming lead and a lot of secondary actors who would probably be better in different roles. Except I say that, and then I remember the guy who plays Magnum P.E. was on that sitcom that got canceled before the second episode even hit the air. Where they were, where he dressed up as a woman. It was like a modern day Bosom Buddies. It was a couple seasons ago. I can't remember what it was called.
I know it was on ABC. I remember
it was
that.
On ABC for a quick flash, and then it was gone. There's nothing special about the show other than the fact that Craig Robinson is a funny guy who's pretty talented. And definitely has the charisma to be the lead on a show like this. It's just that the show itself isn't doing itself any favors with the writing or the storylines that it's doing with the other characters. It's just kind of dumb.
Yeah.
So I feel bad because it's like Rebel Wilson being wasted on Happy Fun Night or whatever
Super
that was
Fun
called.
Night.
Super Fun Night. Because she's excellent in so many ways. And then they put her in this crappy show that didn't showcase her well at all. I think that's the same problem with Mr. Robinson, and it's probably going to hurt Craig for what could be his next move into a better program.
Yeah. Or it could be like, oh, yeah, what? He was in this thing called Mr. Robinson? I don't remember it when he's, you know, done something better afterwards, hopefully. Because, yeah, I mean, where I don't hate the show, I'm not in love with the show, like, oh, I want to see a season two on this.
The third episode was I have a problem with my roommate, so I'm going to get another roommate and have them go to war with each other thing.
Yeah.
It's such cliche crap. What was that show that was on Fox last season with the Mulaney show or whatever?
Yeah, Mulaney.
Yeah. What they were trying to do is they were trying to basically be like old sitcoms, I guess is what they said. Oh, it's going to be like watching the old classic sitcoms and all that dumb comedy, and it was just awful. This is like that, except I don't think they're saying out loud that's what they're trying to emulate.
Yeah.
It's like the old Welcome Back, Kotter writers got together with a bunch of people left over from who didn't quite make it in the first couple of seasons of Three's Company, but came in towards the end when they'd gotten to the third blonde roommate and taken those plots and rehashed them a little bit and maybe did some Joni Loves Chachi and some Aftermath. Like, the also-ran sitcomers are making this show.
Yeah. So I want you to tell me, because I heard about this at my college group on Thursday. Tell me a little bit about I Am Chris Farley.
All right. I'm going to start out by saying that I was not a Chris Farley fan. Like, not that I had anything against Chris Farley, but that era of Saturday Night Live with him and Spade and Sandler and Schneider, you know, all of Sandler's friends, was an era that I wasn't really watching SNL. That it was like I had skipped over a few seasons and I got back to it around the time of Tina Fey.
Yeah.
It's not like those seasons were bad necessarily, but they were not, like, it just wasn't something that I was paying attention to. And I've never seen Black Sheep. I've never seen Tommy Boy. I've seen Farley in a ton of stuff. You know, I've seen him in the Coneheads movie. I've seen him in Wayne's World. I've seen him show up in things. And I always thought he was, like, you know, he was a funny guy. But I've never seen Beverly Hills Ninja. It never even felt compelled to turn it on when it was on cable. Just like, nah.
Well, but, I got that message from Evan Blake.
Oh, I just saw it. I was curious about this more because I've been watching a lot of nostalgia SNL stuff. I watched here's SNL in the 80s, here's SNL in the 90s, in the 2000s, the 2010s. They had their 40th anniversary a few months ago. So I was interested in seeing this, and I also know that a lot of other people were like big fans, and they were saying, oh, I watched this and it welled up and, you know, felt a lump in my throat and stuff. And I get it. You can see the guy and you can see that he was really talented, he was really intense. And the biggest thing is that he's a really lovable guy. You know, he's the guy who had a big heart, not just because he ate a lot of pork like me, but because he was a good dude that tried really hard to be funny and, you know, was able to be goofy funny. I feel like I knew those guys. I feel like maybe I sort of was that guy, not to the degree that he is, but just that, you know, the guy who's always trying to crack a joke just because maybe that'll get people to kind of like you a little bit, you know.
Yeah,
and he was that, but to such a high level because everybody loved him. You know, if you were a fan of those moments in time, you were a fan of Chris Farley. And this was a really good special. It opened up with his brother, who looks a lot like him.
Yeah.
And he has a lot of mannerisms and stuff. And I'm kind of like, oh, you could be the Jim Belushi to his John. Thank you for not doing that. But I don't want to see you be held back just because people are going to unfairly compare you to your brother. And some of the other people that I didn't realize were associated with him, telling stories about his life and stuff. And then people who'd been on the show with him, including people who had just been on the episodes that were the really famous ones, like Christina Applegate doing the guy in a van down by the river.
Yeah.
Stuff. It was a really sweet special put together with a lot of people who just seriously loved this man, who had no agenda. Like, David Spade is someone who always comes across kind of smarmy and kind of like, you know, just... But when you hear him talk about Chris, you know that there's nothing but genuine love coming from that guy for someone who was one of his best friends.
Yeah,
Sandler was
yeah.
on there. Sandler, same thing. You know, Sandler talks about Chris, and it's such uplifting joy when he talks about this guy. And then the pain when they start talking about seeing him basically breaking down, just continuously doing the alcohol and stuff, and just they know it's destroying him and them trying to protect him. Lorne Michaels on there talking about it and everything. Is like, you knew that the show meant more to him than probably anything else. And we tried to get him back on the show just to give him that. We knew that he was going through so many rough things, and we tried to get him back on there just to let him have that. It was a pretty touching special. I just kind of, I recorded it a few weeks ago when it was on, and I've been holding back on watching it, and I just decided to throw it on last night. And Erin, same thing, you know, she's just like, yeah, he was really great. And she's watching, she's like, I love that sketch. That sketch was just the funniest thing in the world. He was so great. So I think that was more her era than it was for mine.
Yeah.
But it was, it's a good watch. It's definitely one of those things that it kind of reminds you, you know, some of the people that we have lost that have been, you know, big, huge presence on screen, you know, like John Belushi, that suddenly did not have him here anymore, and how much that hurts.
Yeah. So I want to take, because usually we end the show with doing all those things, but I want to end a little bit with some news, because I saw this earlier, and I want to get your opinion on this. NBC has released the first three hosts for SNL. The big advertisement is the third host, but hey, we're going to save that for when it's third. Starting out for the 41st season, the premiere episode will be Miley Cyrus. Yeah, okay, cool. And then Amy Schumer.
Makes sense.
Yeah, which she'll be promoting her stand-up special Live from the Apollo, which will be the week after. So Miley Cyrus is October 3rd, Amy Schumer is October 10th, and then Tracy Morgan is coming back.
Wow.
On October 17th. Yeah, because that's what everyone's going for is, Tracy Morgan's coming back to SNL, and I'm like, wait, last I saw him, he was in a wheelchair because of the accident when he was hit by a Walmart truck.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, it's not just Tracy Morgan going back to SNL. It's Tracy Morgan coming essentially out of the forced retirement he's been in while he's been recovering from that accident. That's a big deal, is to see him do anything.
Yeah.
is important at this point. But to see him go and do a live show, you know, to the show that essentially gave him his big start, that's huge. That is fantastic. I'm very excited for that. You know, I'm excited to see him back on my screen again.
Yeah. Also, note to you, Corey, do not look through Beat's notes, because you will get spoiled on Mr. Robot.
Okay.
But yeah, so I think that just does about just does it here for us. Is there anything else you want to add?
No, man. Like I said, I've been watching a lot of horror movies this week.
There is, because you have a new show.
I do. I've been watching a lot of horror movies. And I had to do something with all of this built-up knowledge and rage. So
and fear?
Maybe a little bit. So I don't think we made a secret of it. We've hinted about it for a while, and then last week I think I even dropped the name. I am doing the co-hosting duties with Matt Stein over on Galactic Netcasts of the new Podcast of Terror. The first episode is already out on Stitcher and iTunes. I am not on that one. That does not mean you should skip it. It's Matt and one of his best friends, and I loved that episode and kind of have a harsh jealousy of it, because it's just so informal and two buddies talking about something and just being dumb and funny, and I thought it was a blast. So you should definitely listen to that first episode, and then you can listen to the second episode, which should be publishing soon, that I am on.
And a warning, if you watch it live, and I'm giving Matt crap for this, if you watch the second episode, Matt was the one who was controlling, and he clicked on Corey, so that's why you saw Corey for a good...
You're going to see a lot of this. You're going to see a lot of this guy. You're gonna get a lot of this right here.
Although, I do say, because I saw it, like I got on Sunday, and I'm like, oh, hey, Corey's doing the show. I go and watch it, and I'm like, and I saw the background, I'm like, oh, Corey's going to start switching paintings for for whichever show he's on. Like,
I thought about switching back and forth between them, and I'm like, I'm a little bit fat and lazy. And I'm a little bit rock and roll. So I decided not to do that this week. But I've always wanted to have more of my wife's art present in the room for when I get to do the shows. And I figured, yeah, I'm going to do a horror show. I should put up one of Aaron's zombie paintings. I've asked her to do some more original art, and then I can have things that maybe suit both things that I'm on. Maybe we'll get there.
Maybe getting her painting like an old-timey TV or something like that for when we're doing this show. And then
my wife is very popular, and I do not warrant enough of her time and attention compared to her real audience.
Yes.
But hey, yeah, so I'm on the Podcast of Terror, me and Matt Stein. I had a lot of fun doing it. We talked about, our first movie was a film about the Slender Man called Always Watching, and I've been reading up more and more about the mythology of that. There's some interesting stuff on that I hope we'll get to touch on more later on.
Yeah.
But we do our best.
Yeah, which leads to the... You can check that out at gncasts.com. That's GN.
Or you will be able to sign up for the feeds through iTunes or Stitcher.
Yeah, it's where you can find all the stuff over there. Because something tells me that we'll still be doing the shows, but we're going to be doing them under a different banner head.
There may be some changes to the Else Nerds to some degree, but it'll still be... Else and Nerdy.
Yes. Because once I figure out some things, there may be a comic book show coming up over there that would sound very familiar to people who are long-term fans and watch the 616. Now, I will reveal this. That show will be called The Splash Page.
Yeah, you would have to be a long-time fan to have watched the 616.
Yes. We have a whole bunch of other stuff. We've got ideas flowing out constantly about doing shows over there, and it's going to be great.
Because we're so good at getting done with the stuff that we do already.
Yeah.
Last few minutes, Jerry Ball with slop.
Yeah, so you can find out more about our stuff by following us on Twitter at ElseNerds. You could check out our webpage at ElseNerds.com. You could like our Facebook group at facebook.elsenerds.com. We have full archives over at our YouTube channel at watch.elsenerds.com. I'm going to pull an Anthony Carboni and Jeff Cannata. If you are listening to us on Stitcher or on iTunes, all five of you, rate us. Give us a 5-star rating. Don't review, because the reviews don't mean anything. They don't. The reviews is just, oh, hey, they were words. You can leave good things if you want, but you don't have to. I want to see some ratings, because I want to know who's watching. And actually, introduce yourself. How about that? If you are watching, or if you are listening on iTunes or whatever.
That's more my speed. I'm more interested in that. Five-star reviews and stuff. If it's just somebody clicked a button, I don't know if it means as much to me as somebody actually had something to say about it.
Yeah, so, introduce yourself. We might even read a couple out in a future episode if we have enough people who are saying interesting things. And also you can comment on YouTube as well and all that. So do all that stuff.
I encourage YouTube comments. That's not going to blow up in your face.
I welcome all YouTube comments. And we record What Else Is On every Monday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern, 6:30 p.m. Western. And we mentioned it before, mentioned it again, you have the Galactic Netcast, where you have the Podcast of Terror, their new show, Adventure Party, Alien Invasion, Sci-Fi Geeks Club, coming into the near future, the Splash Page, and a whole bunch of other shows, including the Net Bites with Galactic Gaming News, which their host, Ryan Murphy, was just on Current Geek. And so many other great things over there at gncasts.com. And I think all that's left to say is this has been a Don't Tell Glenn production. We'll see you guys next time.
Take care, everybody.